Welcome to the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. Now your hosts.
Hello and welcome to the Hyperion Hub, your meeting place for all things Disney. I'm John Alois and I'm joined by Sean Degenhart.
Hi-ho.
And John Redling Schaefer.
Didn't you do that last time?
He's we back. Talked
to, yeah, probably, yeah. Yes.
I was saying something about my
by
Fozzie.
Popular demand. Yeah.
Miss Piggy comes through with a chop across the face.
We're glad you're with us. You can follow us on social media. You can email us at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. If you have a Disney review, send us a voice recorded message at podcast@thehyperionhub.com, and we may play it on the show. And wherever you're listening to us, please subscribe. You'll never miss an episode. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. It helps more people find the show.
It's time for our Disney Views.
Okay, well, a brand new documentary has been announced on Disney Plus, premiering May 31st, and I am really excited about this one. Jim Henson, Idea Man. This is, I think, one of the big things we kind of been waiting for, especially with the affiliation with the Muppets, with Disney. It looks like it's going to be incredible. A trailer dropped just recently here toward the end of April, and it looks like it's going to be a crier.
So this is the Ron Howard project?
Yes.
Oh, mm-hmm. Man. What was that, a two-minute trailer that you're just going through all the feels, young and old alike. Just
and
amazing.
It's not just Muppets, but, I mean, it encompasses his whole life and Sesame Street and Dark Crystal and Labyrinth. And
it looks like family is involved in the project, so mm-hmm. we're going to get to know him also as a father, and I'm very excited yet depressed to watch it, you know?
Yeah, he was only 53 when he passed away. Oh. You said from strep throat, right?
It kind of, and by no means do I just play a doctor on TV, and crazy to think that he was working so hard that he just decided not to go to the hospital, and then by the time he did, it was too late. It's just so sad.
And the crazy thing is that's 34 years ago that he passed away, so he would be close to 90 today had he lived. That's just insane. And how much he accomplished in his 53 years.
Tremendously creative person. We'll get to hear more about his private life as well, and his son we saw in the trailer. So this should be revealing, and he seems like a really interesting person. I've never read a book about him or seen any other documentaries. We've only heard people talk about him, I have, in other shows and documentaries.
Years ago, and I don't remember, it could have been 10 or 15 years ago, Lakeview Museum here in Peoria, Illinois, had an exhibit, a Jim Henson exhibit, and his wife was here and gave a speech, and I was able to be there for that. That was really fascinating.
Wow.
So yeah, we're looking forward to seeing that here at the end of May.
On Disney Plus.
On Disney Plus.
At the end of the 1930s, the Disney studio released Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, and at the time, it was the highest-grossing film ever. As we move into the 1940s, Walt's thinking about expansion in both feature-length films and actually expanding his physical footprint in Hollywood.
Boy, listen to the wartime language of John Alois, expanding footprints, growth, he had the right idea, just the wrong time.
With the revenue from Snow White, Disney builds a brand new studio in Burbank, California, and moves out of the Hyperion Avenue building. The facility itself was set up like an animation factory, with the largest building set for animation. Others were made for ink and paint, camera, and editing. In 1941, Disney produced a film called The Reluctant Dragon, which took audiences basically on a tour of the new studio. Walt created a college campus feel. It had streets and green areas. Walt's daughters used to play there on the weekends when he would go into the studio and work, and they learned how to ride their bikes there. In February of 1940, Disney released Pinocchio. Some animation historians consider it as perfect of an animated film that's ever been made in terms of art direction, animation, layout, and special effects. Visually, it's stunning, and it's an improvement over Snow White, in my opinion. as far as looks go. Next on the list was
Snow White's much better looking than Pinocchio.
He's just a big dummy.
Maybe the blue fairy, you know.
Next on the list was Fantasia. It's probably the most unusual film Walt ever produces, but once again, he stretches the creative boundaries by combining music and abstract art. He was looking to reproduce the feeling of hearing music in a concert venue. He helped develop stereophonic sound, or Fantasound, as he called it. The budget erupted to over $2 million. What did you think of it?
Oh, I love Fantasia. It was kind of intended to be an ongoing project, and not many theaters were able to adapt for Fantasound, so I don't think it ever really took off as much as he had hoped. And of course, it was not a huge success at the box office.
I don't think it became a profitable movie until the 1980s, after it had been released several
times. But it's a beautiful film, and everybody knows Chernabog, and of course, Sorcerer's Apprentice, and The Nutcracker.
The Hat became the main attraction at Hollywood Studios for how long? Mm-hmm. 15, 20 years?
World War II begins in Europe in 1939, and that has a major effect on the film business, as you would expect. Because of this, neither Pinocchio nor the experimental Fantasia did well at all. The war actually cuts off about 40% of revenue from overseas markets. But Walt pushes forward. Bambi allows his animators to strive for more realistic animals, master the art and believability, and then put it to animation. So they started bringing in animals to sound stages and on the grounds so animators could study them.
And we've all seen that video footage of them, you know, sitting in the pens with them, you know, watching them move around. And
yeah. Bambi was also the first time we saw an animated feature film where a hero or heroine is killed. It happens off screen, but Bambi's mother being shot created one of the saddest moments in cinema history.
But it also, and I'll digress because I cry every time she dies, but one of the funniest lines in Friends when they are talking about watching Bambi and Chandler says, "Yes, it's so sad when they stop drawing the deer."
So snappy.
But let's get back on
that
track.
Chandler. Yeah. The studio was racking up great debt because of the loss of the European market. Rumors began to grow, and employees were becoming anxious. And in the meantime, Walt and the other executives are determining the worth of the employees, and things like seniority don't seem to carry as much importance, according to some of the employees. Herbert Sorrell is trying to create a union, and Walt is fighting him on the creation of this union. The Disney animators' strike began on May 29th, 1941. It would last for 4 months until September 21st.
All right, let's do a parallel timeline then with World War II. You said May to September of 41. Mm-hmm. We're not quite in the war yet. We're still in our
Things are bubbling.
Things are bubbling, but we're still in our isolationist phase. So there are domestic issues that are the focus for major corporations, but you know, that's interesting that it was over 4 months, because imagine what we would be dealing with an extra 3 or 4 into 42 with all that you're going to get to here, I'm assuming, in a little bit.
The strike had a tremendous effect on Walt Disney. Many believe he strived for a utopia with the studio and considered the employees close personal friends. That all they said it was like a family atmosphere.
Well,
at least he wanted it to be.
And that translates into his testimony in front of the House committee that we talked about. Gosh, that's been a long time ago now, that the 75th anniversary of the anti-communist hearings. And he did. Even in his testimony, he talked about the boys.
Yeah. Yep. And that happened in 1947. And not the boys, the Sherman brothers.
No, but he boys, called collectively yes,
his employees.
The boys, yeah.
The utopia seemed to all end with the strike. Workers picketed in front of his studio and called him names as he drove in with his daughters in the car. It was an ugly situation. Earlier in 1941, Walt was approached by the U.S. government to take a goodwill trip to Latin America. There was a growing fear the Nazis would recruit and eventually take over South America. So this trip was commissioned by the United States Department of State as part of the Good Neighbor Policy. Roy wanted Walt to get away from the business of the strike. So Walt took a group of animators south and toured several areas. Eventually, this trip would produce two feature-length films for the Disney company, Saludos Amigos and The Three Caballeros. While in South America, the strike was settled, with the studio pretty much losing everything they were fighting for, and Walt's father passes away. This is becoming an ever-increasingly difficult time for Walt. His mother had passed 3 years earlier. But again, he and his studio press forward. Dumbo was the next feature-length film to be released. While the studio wasn't producing tremendous revenue, it was still extremely popular thanks to the shorts, Mickey Mouse, and of course, the feature-length films. Dumbo was scheduled to be on the cover of Time magazine in early December 1941. And you can find photos of that, what that cover would have looked like.
So they bring in an elephant to the studio like they did Deer for Bambi?
I don't know. Maybe baby elephants. I don't remember ever seeing any footage
of that.
Curious
if they were flying around the studio. Okay, just checking.
So I'm guessing that cover was interrupted by something else.
December 7th.
No, that's a date that shall live in something. I don't remember anyway.
Infamy. Yes, there you go.
Thanks, guys.
The Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, bringing the United States into World War II. The U.S. Army actually overtook the studio with the purpose of protecting...
Knock, knock.
Yeah.
Hi, Walt.
And that's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, Walt got the call. Was it Monday morning or Tuesday morning?
Yeah.
Said, and it reminds me of the scene in War Games when, you know, the general's talking to the... to the private over the phone, and
I'm
still here. It's like, Mr. Disney, you should probably get down here.
The guy's first day on security. The army's here.
So they wanted to protect the nearby Lockheed Air Plant. That was the whole reason for taking over the studio.
Sure.
Well, that's what they said. The studio halted productions and began working on U.S. military training and propaganda films. Victory Through Air Power was probably the most popular movie that would come out of this era.
That was 1943, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that Donald Duck is a mascot
for
certain, you know, air units, just, I love, again, horrible circumstances in which the whole world was placed, but through all that, you know, America and Americana is still a part of the military presence.
And even beyond those shorts and the propaganda films, all of the iconography that they designed for various troops and, you know, combat groups and
for
everything is just fascinating.
Yeah, and they weren't making money at this time. I mean, they were trying to be as patriotic, you know, for essentially developing for the military and not taking in a large income from the government. So
I heard, you know, about Herb Ryman, you know, the artist that famously designed Disneyland. He was getting a little frustrated with some of the work he was having to do during this time because they were basically doing guidebooks and, you know, things for equipment and, you know, things like that, that he was just drawing maps, and that was getting a little frustrating for him.
Well, everybody got to do their part.
Exactly.
You know? Rosie Riveter needs to know where to rivet, right?
Yeah. So, following the war, Walt and Roy disagree on the direction of the studio. Walt wants to continue to experiment, and Roy, understanding the financial situation of the studio, knows they need to get back to what had made them successful in the past. So, they settle on exploring more of the world of live action. Walt also starts to tinker with documentary filmmaking. He hires a husband and wife couple, the Malots, to go to Alaska to film wildlife. This would be a 30-minute nature documentary called Seal Island, and it was the first true-life adventure film for the studio. Disney's distributor, RKO, wanted nothing to do with this movie. Walt had a friend who ran the Crown Theater in Pasadena who agreed to run the film in order for it to qualify for the Academy Awards, and sure enough, it won the Best Documentary.
I mean, think about the timing again. Alaska's not even a state.
Right.
I mean, they're off to the wild frontier, right? I mean, it's just, I love that story about how they didn't want anything to do with it. Fine, I'll show you.
That comes up again in a moment here, but people are comfortable with Disney in that cartoon bubble.
Yes,
you know?
Do not leave the bubble. Yes.
Yeah. Reading from D23, according to legend, Walt took the Oscar down to Roy Disney's office and said, "Here, Roy, take this over to RKO and bang them over the head with it."
Take this, all of you, and eat from it, right? Yes.
As one could expect, Arkea was soon clamoring for more of the True Life adventures. Because of the war, Disney stopped making full-length feature animated films and instead produced shorts and would combine them to create one full-length feature. These are known as the package films, and they include previously mentioned Saludos Amigos and Three Caballeros, Make Mine Music, Fun and Fancy Free, Melody Time, and the last one was The Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad. Mm.
And those, even though they were kind of like, well, what can we do? I mean, those are still excellent
productions. I agree.
Productions.
And we'll get to that again later. I've got some thoughts on
just
those.
Wait, Sean.
No, they're
not
wonderful.
See the signal?
They're wonderful. They're safe. You know, they're not, he's not really stretching creatively.
No.
Because they're not one story arc, but it does allow them still to experiment and
think about
again,
how
move
that,
forward and bring in some money.
Right, and think how that foreshadows what you see on a lot of cartoons on the Disney Channel anymore. It's the same show, but it's two different stories or three, and nothing related. And that's the beauty. And I'm sure Americans' attention span was pulled in many different directions in the mid-40s, and the beauty of those is it's a temporary reprieve. Mm-hmm. It's not a hard thinker. We can just take our mind off of who's overseas and not with us.
And for us, when we were kids in school, I mean, that's how I saw Johnny Appleseed and
yep.
a lot of those, you know, as the smaller yep. segments. And the talents.
That's how John studied for right. Tess, too. The Cliff's Notes? Yeah, all right, let's go.
And the talent that he had
yes.
on these. Nelson Eddy, Dinah Shore, Benny Goodman, the Andrews Sisters, Dennis Day, Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians, Roy Rogers.
You're losing.
I think that was Paul Lynn's band.
Fred Waring and the Pennsylvanians was a very pop.
Fred Waring, yes, I do know who that is.
They recorded that 'Twas the Night Before Christmas
yes.
arrangement that everybody loves. Very popular vocal
was
group in the 40s and 50s. I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
He did a lot of Disney music.
He did.
Yeah.
Roy Rogers, Sons of the Pioneers. I mean, that's no slouch of mm-hmm. talent.
Agreed.
Yeah. Agreed.
So Dear to My Heart was going to be Disney's first full-length live-action film, but RKO wanted animation included, since that's what Disney was known for. So animation segments were added, and Disney's first all-live-action film wouldn't come until the next decade. So the 1940s are kind of a roller coaster for Walt and his studio. Walt suffers from a nervous breakdown due to the financial constraints and the strike. The studio really isn't producing many creative films, like I said, and it's just kind of chugging along. In 1947, we have the House of Un-American
Activities. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That he is involved with. Fortunately for his company, they don't really get involved, but Walt kind of represents his company.
Well, and he's, again, I think, whether you like it or not, I think he was called as a witness. He, of course, being the patriot, felt it was his obligation to go testify. And
he was still ticked off.
He was still ticked off about the unions, but yeah. I also think those on the committee, many of whom ended up in prison themselves, exploited him. I'll just say mm-hmm. it. They knew he would come and say some of the things they wanted him to say.
Yeah. Late in the decade, Disney decides to start to return to their roots and produce a single subject animated feature. We'll hear about that and its production of the full-length live-action films in the next installment. As we enter the 1950s, America begins to grow outward from the city. It finds new forms of leisure. Television changes the landscape. Disney's at the forefront, and Walt explores a new realm based on themed entertainment.
You get the feeling we're on the carousel of progress as yes. we're doing this. I'm getting ready to go into the 50s. We're going to talk about suburbia.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow.
I mean, I really feel like that we're on a ride here, yeah.
So, yeah, this is the end of the 40s, but starting with this episode, I'm going to mention some underappreciated films from each decade. In honor of Disney's first movie, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, who were minors, we're going to call this segment
ER.
Hidden Gems.
Ooh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, thank you.
He yelled at us over dad jokes, right. By the way. You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
These are movies that have been forgotten or overlooked, and for the 40s, I have three. All of them are packaged films. The first is Make Mine Music from 1946. There's a great short in this one called All the Cats Join In. It's a reflection on post-war pop culture. Benny Goodman, as you said, supplies the swing music. Other shorts are Casey at the Bat and the Whale Who Wanted to Sing at the Met.
But I think the most popular for me is Peter and the Wolf.
Yes.
That's just a classic.
Yep, absolutely. Another film in my hidden gems is Fun and Fancy Free in 47. It's the only official movie in the Disney canon, meaning made by Disney Feature Animation, that has Mickey, Donald, and Goofy in it.
Hmm. And what is that, pray tell?
Mickey and the Beanstalk. Yes, yes, it's a short inside the film.
I love him slicing that bean when they're sitting at the table hungry.
It's so sad.
Hey, you're trying to stretch every bit of that legume, right? Yeah.
And finally, Melody Time from 48, and I love the short, as you said, Legend of Johnny Appleseed. It features the song The Lord is Good to Me, which is catchy. Pecos Bill is also part of that movie.
I like his restaurant at Disney World. Yes.
And Once Upon a Winter Time with Francis Langford. Yep. It's just a delight. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And that one shows up in the sing-along DVDs, yeah. I believe, mm-hmm. and the videotapes from the 80s.
Now, would you also consider Adventures of Ichabod and Mr. Toad one of the package features?
Probably. Well, yeah, it's a package feature, but I wouldn't call it underappreciated. Maybe okay. Because we watch it every year.
Yeah, right.
You know?
You guys have a movie watching night without me? Is that what I'm hearing?
Not him and me.
Well, shoot. Surprise. Yes. Thanks, guys.
I thought you said you invited him.
Invitation got lost in the mail.
Sources for this episode include D23.com. Oh, sorry.
Sean Degenhart is your source.
Oh, yes. Well, okay. Sources for this episode include Sean Degenhart, D23.com, Walt the Man Behind the Myth, a film directed by Jean-Pierre Isbaltz.
Ooh la la.
I have never been corrected, so I'm just going to go with it. The great.
If you say it quickly enough and with enough arrogance, no one's Jean-Pierre.
Yes. The great Disney Revolt by Jake S. Friedman, former guest, and an American original by Bob Thomas. And I also want to point out that we have interviews based on some of the subjects we talked about here tonight. Mm-hmm. And you did a show on the House.
On American.
Yep. So make sure you check out our archives. All of our episodes are archived on your favorite podcast platform.
And all stored in John's basement.
That's the bunker.
Hermetically sealed.
The vault.
He comes out just for the show and then goes back in.
Every 7 years.
With the cicadas every 13 or whatever it is. Yeah. Check local listing.
Make sure you follow us on social media. You can email us at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. It helps more people find the show. Till next week, have a great one, everyone.
We're glad you could join us. We'd love to hear from you. You can email or send us a recorded audio message at podcast@thehyperionhub.com. Find us on social media. The Hyperion Hub is not affiliated with the Walt Disney Company or its subsidiaries. We'll meet you next time at the Hyperion Hub.